For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Qatari hoax uncovered. I just read about World Cup 22 in French satire magazine and ran with it, admits shamefaced Sepp Blatter. Air-conditioned clouds, that was them too. Meanwhile, in the real world, Lampard enters double century club. JT left having we outside. But while Hammers fans throw money at Frankie, why won't club do likewise? We look at the race for top four and a church-friendly weekend at the bottom, wins for Saints, and Benteke performing a big Christian conversion for Villa, plus Neon, who got what in Europa League draws, Champions League draws, and who wanted to get into Mrs. Leonardo's draws, plus posts, tweets, and more in Football Weekly. Yet another Football Weekly with yet another lineup of smiling faces. Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, a day late.
And many happy returns.
James Horncastle. Yeah. Sexy pirate voices. James Horncastle. This isn't me, I hasten to add. Although I... It's Dublin Roo. Best thing about Horncastle, best thing this is that his name, says Dublin Roo, manages to conjure up the image of a saucy pirate, and he has the voice to get away with it. Say something for Dublin Roo. Go on, James.
Hello.
Oh, you're shivering my timbers right now, I can tell you that much. Simon Burnton.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, no piracy on me.
No, indeed not. We don't like piracy, of course.
Even
no,
old school don't. Piracy? Just, is it Somali piracy? You're not.
I think any piracy. Yeah.
Acts of piracy, not acts good, but not. Comic pirate voices are very much plus.
Right. Why couldn't the kid get into the pirate film?
Go on.
Because it was rated R. Oh dear. Anyway, now Spurs. Three straight defeats. Is it happening all over again, James?
No, I don't think it necessarily is.
What is it, first of all?
Well, I think Thursday was a bit of an aberration against Inter Milan. Yeah, I think AVB perhaps got his tactics wrong for that. He wanted to get an away goal. But I think, you know, given the advantage they had in the first leg and they still went through, the defeat is meaningless, really.
Is it meaningless? Can you lose 4-1 and it not have some meaning?
Well, I just think that, you know, I also dispute this sort of argument that, you know, they're Bale dependent. I think, they lost again on Sunday with Bale in the team, but I think Spurs are a much better team than a lot of people give them credit for, rather than saying, you know, it's the Bale show and that's it. You take him out and everything falls apart. Mm. And I think, you know, to some extent, they did go, 120 minutes on Thursday night. And so you could expect maybe some tiredness on Sunday. The only issue I thought was maybe with the selection this time, where he played Asua Koto in front of Vertonghen. There are a few little things there which were strange.
Might it be that they are a one-man team, but that man isn't Bale. It's actually Aaron Lennon, and it's his absence that's causing them to collapse.
Well, I think they lack balance when either one of those aren't in the team, because I don't think either Sigurdsson or he's tended to play Sigurdsson or Dempsey out wide when one of them isn't there, well, or to accommodate Bale going in the middle. And I think both of those are square pegs in round holes. They're not natural wide players. And when you have got natural wide players like Bale and London in the middle, sorry, out wide, they're a much more balanced team.
Mm. Plus, terrific save by Schwarzer and terrific performance by Fulham. They looked well up for this one.
Yeah, they got it tactically right. I kind of agree with you about Lennon. I always found that at Tottenham, certainly when under Redknapp, which is, of limited relevance now, but Lennon provides effective width on the right and kind of stretches opponents and stretches games, and that they always massively benefited from his threat, even though people criticise his final ball, and often that's true, but just his presence on the right does stretch teams and allows Bale and there are other players to benefit. Hmm? I think his presence was missed yesterday.
Right, okay. Or his absence was felt. One of the two.
Yeah, you could say that too.
Right, okay. What do you think, Barry? You're a big Lennon fan, I know.
Well, I'm not a big Lennon fan, but his pace is his only attribute, in my opinion. I'm not convinced by him as a player, although he has improved this season since my last withering criticism of him. But I didn't see this game, it wasn't televised, but I did read that Martin Jol said Spurs were the better team and Fulham were lucky to win, so I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Football is a game of fine margins. of course. It is interesting, though, the way that it has brought that top four race back together now, because Chelsea moved past Spurs into third place. They're 1 point ahead of Tottenham. And now Arsenal, 4 points behind, but with a game in hand. And it's interesting you talk about fatigue after 120 minutes in Milan. Of course, Spurs and Chelsea are both still in the Europa League. Arsenal aren't, so Wenger's plan to get out of cups as early as possible about to bear fruit for their top four challenge.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that was his grand plan from the beginning. Mm. But I think Arsenal have actually got one of the easiest run-ins as well. I saw a sort of breakdown of teams' run-ins. I think theirs is the second easiest.
Well, it's all a little bit subjective, but it certainly is a fairly soft. They're all winnable games, I think.
Definitely. Looking at the next few games, they've got Reading, West Brom, and Norwich, and Chelsea and Tottenham have to play each other in that period. So, potential there for them, maybe.
Right. Should we have a quick word about Chelsea, about Frank Lampard? This one wasn't televised either, bizarrely, wasn't it? The Chelsea West Ham.
Yeah, they seem to make a well. I mean, Wigan Newcastle was an interesting game.
It certainly was.
Both in prospect and as it turned out for various reasons. But yeah, Chelsea West Ham looked like a good game, both in prospect and in actuality. It looked like it was pretty much a Matter and Hazard show. The two of them looked phenomenal. Lampard, of course, he scored his 200th goal, and everyone was, I mean, you need to salute a player who has been so consistently excellent for a long period. Mm. Although saluting him with a barrage of coins, which is what West Ham fans did, would seem an unlikely choice.
Yeah,
perhaps an unwise one.
Pretty awful behaviour there by the travelling fans. So all the headlines about Frank Lampard today and why this 200th goal should mean that he should get a new contract. But of course, you mentioned Mata and Hazard, and I guess that's the argument of the club. Nice though he has been for the last 10, 11 years, we've now got these fellas.
Yeah, and I guess you think about Roy Hodgson's argument about Roy Hodgson's justification for not picking Rio Ferdinand, saying that a player of that seniority and experience and excellence shouldn't be picked to just sit on the bench. And I guess Chelsea could approach the discussions with Lampard with that point of view. He's an excellent player and he should be playing. And if they can't guarantee him a starting position, then maybe.
But he's never raised objections about being on the bench, at least not publicly, not directly. And
sure.
It's an interesting one.
I think under AVB he was a little bit upset that...
But you want that from your player, don't you? Want them to want to play.
Exactly. Yeah. I think for all that Mata and Hazard were excellent yesterday, they play in different positions. I think once Lampard does leave, once retires, say, if he stays at the club, then his loss will be felt. His absence will be felt.
For sure. Here's a stat.
Go for it.
10 consecutive seasons with 10 or more Premier League goals. How many other players have done that? That's right, none. None players have done that. Steven Gerrard, how many times has he hit double figures in league goals? 3 times. Paul Scholes, twice.
Mm. But there seems to be some suggestion that Chelsea are treating Lampard really badly by not offering him a contract, and they're not. I mean, if they don't offer him a contract, someone else will.
Mm. Who's going to offer him a contract, Barry?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, I thought you might have done rumours or something.
He's been linked with the move to the MLS and, he's plenty to offer any club. But there's also, I think, the suggestion that Abramovich doesn't want him at Chelsea because he was instrumental in undermining André Villas-Boas when he was manager there. So I don't know if that's true or not. But
I think there's also an argument that as long as, say, Lampard and Terry are at the club, the players that they've brought in to sort of bring through this transition will never show this sort of character or take responsibility, whilst these two characters with such influence are there. So part of their growing process, say for them to kick on a bit, is to take Lampard and Terry out of the equation.
Mm. Terry, indeed, increasingly out of the equation there.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was again on the bench. But again, in terms of to bring through new leaders, new leadership at the club, because, but I think, in Lampard's case, he's someone who's conducted himself, reasonably well throughout his career. And you still wouldn't sort of argue, why wouldn't he be kept on putting the coaching staff somewhere or whatever. Mm. But as as Barry says, you know, some internal politics there that might dissuade them from keeping him on.
All right. Title race. Well, of course, Man United beat Reading, but only by the one goal, because Robin van Persie can't score anymore. And in the meantime, Man City, of course, pretty much hand over the title by losing at Everton. Now, all right, they should have had a penalty. But that aside, how about this? That's how you defend in 10. That's not how you attack with a man advantage.
Interesting to read about Simon Brodkin, the BBC Three comedian and brother of Guardian sports desk staffer John.
Right, interesting story. Tell us about that one, Simon.
He decked himself out in full Manchester City training kit and slid onto the pitch pre-match and attempted to warm up with the lads.
Mm.
Eventually got dubbed in by David
Pratt. How long did he last?
Several minutes.
Right.
Yes, and then he spent, he spent a night at Her Majesty's pleasure.
Right.
But they could probably have done with it. I mean, they picked 11 comedians, and things didn't get any better for them.
Well, old friend Ken Early saying, I hope for Mancini's sake, he says it in a nicer voice than this, that Man City's board didn't see the Man United-Real Madrid game in which a cleverly managed team show you how you exploit a sending off, Barry.
Yeah, well, Everton owed their manager and their supporters a performance and duly gave one, so... Mm. You know.
So it was Everton being great rather than City failing to seize the occasion?
I think City were poor, but Everton were unquestionably the better team and beat City fair and square with 10 men. Mm. And Mancini, I believe, was too distraught to do his...
There is a kind of can't-be-arsedness about City. I mean, they've won the title and they're...
Well, I think they're carrying too many passengers and that. Too many players who aren't... that bothered about winning. They're just picking up the wages and happy to do that. And now they've won the league, I don't think they're too concerned about winning anything else.
Let's have a pat on the back for Muka. Jan Muka, Slovakian goalkeeper, who's in for Tim Howard, who's got broken bones in his back, which I have to say doesn't sound fun. He was brilliant, wasn't he? And what about Jelovic? Scoring again, eh?
That was a beauty.
Big moment.
Yeah, and he was rather pleased with himself.
Yep.
But yeah, it was a lovely, lovely finish. And hopefully he'll get back in form.
Well,
a defective finish. The nicest finish was the disallowed one in the first half.
Mm.
Morales.
Yeah, Morales. Really beautifully thumped it into the top corner, cruelly and wrongly disallowed.
Mm.
Yes. Yeah, it's quite interesting to see to compare the press reaction to Mancini's no-show and with Ferguson's no-show and after the Real Madrid defeat. Ferguson being, I don't know, there was certainly no element of criticism for his refusal to participate in the press conferences after they lost to Real Madrid in, I guess, fairly heroic fashion. Whereas Mancini has got both barrels from most of the media
has
this
he?
Morning. Yeah.
Saying what?
Well... accusing him basically of cowardice or perhaps even of that kind of can't-be-arsed attitude which you were referring to a moment ago in sending David Platt, when really they felt that he needed to justify himself and to explain his team's poor performance.
Yeah, well, that's a fair shout. I would say, in the meantime, Mario Balotelli, the man he scored, 7 goals in 6 games, on fire, literally.
Yeah, he didn't have to do much, though, did he? I mean, he had his... penalty yesterday, and then one was deflected right in front of him. Yep. Easy goals if you can.
No, the second one he had to lift it up over the keeper.
You said the Jelovic goal was heavily deflected, was it?
Off Clichy, I think, wasn't it?
All right, I was mistaken. I thought he curled it right in himself.
Right.
I didn't. So, yeah, it was a terrible goal. It was a disgrace. He should be ashamed of himself.
Barry, because your attention was somewhat distracted by events down at St Mary's while all this was going on. And we'll talk more about that later on, because right now it's time for a bit of a sting. And after that, we'll be back with Woof, Action from Neon. Hands up, who was excited last Friday to see the Champions League draw? The hands shooting up all over the pod. Well, James, you put a finger in the air, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the air.
Yeah. Well, it was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What was Leonardo doing?
Oh, Leonardo proposed to his long term girlfriend, who's a Sky Italia presenter, whilst he was being interviewed for his reaction to PSG drawing Barcelona.
Yeah.
But she was quite ambiguous about...
I should think she was.
She's very embarrassed. I think she found it quite an awkward situation to be in because, once Leonardo's intentions became clear, you had, you know, his former teammate Costa Curta going sort of bravo, sort of G-ing him on. Yeah. She was just like, come on, can we have a break? Can we go to a break, please? And she was like, okay. And Leonardo kept going, okay, what? And she's like, oh, all right, yes. But
did you say yes? I thought she said, we'll see.
That's the thing. She said, he went, okay, what? And she said, okay. Kind of smiled, said see, but it was like, okay, all right then. But there wasn't a definitive yes. But
right.
We assume afterwards, because she did an interview saying, what was it like? This is the most romantic thing ever.
No.
And she said, she kind of went along with it. She went, oh, I did realise that it was romantic in the end.
Right.
That sort of thing. Because apparently Leonardo's asked for the DVD to give to their son, because they have a son, Tiago, together.
Right.
But yesterday at the Milan game, someone then unveiled a banner asking his girlfriend to marry him. So it's a copycat effect now.
Right, it's going to happen all over. Yeah. Do you know, I might ask somebody to marry me on the pod. Do you know what? But Barry, don't ask me, because I'm going to get really upset. I feel for Leonardo's girlfriend. I think it's the rotten thing to hijack. There's football fans waiting to hear who their team's going to be playing, and he's taking it over his own to, you know, do some kind of jazzy proposal. If he takes this whole business of betrothing himself with Mrs. Leonardo perspective seriously, he doesn't need to do funny gimmicks like doing it on stage in front of everybody.
I do think there's a particular cruelty in live on air or on pitch mid halftime marriage proposals, and certainly anyone who proposed to me that way, I would take it as a sign of a severe character flaw and run as fast as I could in the other direction.
I absolutely agree with you. It's showboating, isn't it? At a time which doesn't call for showboating.
It's a private. It's the most private of moments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not about the big gesture. I'm so with you on that, Simon. How, for example, did you propose?
It was live on television, and I proposed to my wife in a restaurant in Copenhagen.
All right. Cool.
How did you propose, Jim?
I'm not absolutely sure. I genuinely don't know.
You with her in this situation.
Yeah, we were both together at this point.
No, I was meaning with Leonardo's. You know, was it awkward for you? Is that why you gave an ambiguous answer?
Wasn't.
You've just fallen into it.
No. We, you know, the subject came up and it seemed like a reasonable thing to do. Mm. Right.
You're saying there's no need to have the draws on stage, you know, and all this glitzy, celeb-studded audience. What was wrong with, you know, Bert Millichip, Gordon Taylor, a velvet bag and 60 brown balls?
Yeah, nothing was wrong with it.
Nothing.
Nothing was wrong with it. Okay. What did you make of the draw itself then?
Yeah, some great ties. I think Juventus Bayern is probably the tie of the round.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Real Madrid Galatasaray has some good storylines in it because, you know, you've got two of Jose's proteges, two of his disciples in Schneider and Drogba.
Yeah.
Potentially being his undoing.
Right. That's a huge thing, isn't it? Malaga Dortmund. That's one for the Blizzard crowd, isn't it? That'll be genius,
that one. One for the hipsters, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I said, yeah. Yeah. Good. And of course, Malaga very much the upset kings, but Paris Saint-Germain against Barcelona.
Well, that's the last English representative there, apart from Wembley Stadium, of course, and possibly a referee.
Hmm.
So
it's hard to see Beckham as English. He kind of belongs to the world. He belongs to football.
You think he's too big time now to be just English?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, by the way, it was Graham Kelly that used to do the draw with Bert Millichip, not Gordon Taylor.
Right. Okay. Zlatan, of course, who will still be missing for one game of this. Thiago Motta will be returning to Barcelona, of course.
He got sent off famously in that semi-final.
The Busquets thing, yeah. Yeah, that'll be interesting. But to Bayern Juve, because the headline in the Gazetta before the draw was, it's either Galatasaray or we're in real trouble for Juve.
Yeah, I think they're a really genuine dark horse to win this competition because
Juve.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think they've yet to suffer defeat in the Champions League thus far.
Mm.
They haven't conceded a goal in 490 minutes.
It's a long time.
And they have come up against some decent opposition. I think Celtic, you know, okay, let's maybe put that to one side, but in the group stages I thought they showed great character against Chelsea to come back from behind at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
to then beat them emphatically at the Juventus Stadium or the Old Lady Bowl.
And they won, of course, away at the Donbass Arena, didn't they? 1-0
Yeah.
Back in December.
So I think they're solid enough to keep whatever opponent they face very, very close.
Right.
So I think it's a great tie.
Brilliant. And they don't have to worry about Serie A too much because they pretty much got that in the bag because they won. Mind you, Napoli won, Milan won, and Fiorentina won. Inter didn't play because their match away to Sampdoria was postponed because of really rotten weather. Meantime, of course, there was also the Europa League draw in Neon. And here's Simplicikin saying, if no English clubs progressing to the Champions League semi-finals is indicative of a decline at the top of the Premiership, then is having three clubs having a good chance of reaching the semis of the Europa League a sign that further down, things are improving? What do you think, Simon? Thumbs up?
Well, I think it probably is. I think the Premier League has been boosted by a couple of good promotions from below it, from the Championship in the last couple of years, that have strengthened the division as a whole. I think it's a good division. If you exclude the very top this season, Manchester United having streaked clear, I think it's a fairly competitive division. Manchester City have been hideously disappointing.
Hmm.
But otherwise, it's extremely competitive, and that's got to be an advantage. I mean, I guess it's a surprise to see Malaga doing so successfully in Europe, given how uncompetitive the Spanish league is generally seen as being.
That's true.
But, yeah.
I think there's some various conditional factors why the three English teams still in the Europa League. I mean, because this is a competition that Villas-Boas has always taken quite seriously, you know, obviously established his reputation, if you like, on winning it at Porto. Benitez is always someone, you know, who's sort of aim in life is trophies. So if there's an opportunity to win one.
Poor old Benitez. Everyone has a go at him.
I'm not mocking him, but what I'm saying is when he got the Chelsea job, he described it, his decision for taking it, as an opportunity to win trophies. And this is a trophy.
Right.
And if he's only going to be there for, what, another 3-4 months, then he'll take this opportunity seriously. And if you look at the opposition around them, it's something that they can't
But they've got Ruben Kazan, who, of course, knocked out to Atletico Madrid and Levante in previous rounds. They're sixth in the Russian league. They are the easternmost team in the Europa League, Ruben Kazan, but they may be playing their games in Moscow. Just throwing a few facts at you. Yeah. But, of course, Chelsea, they're in a great shake, so they've just scraped by Sparta Prague and Stoya Stia.
They're the reigning European champions.
Everybody's got a different one.
And should be well able to beat Ruben Kazan. But whether they do or not,
of course,
is another matter.
All right, and Spurs against Basel, easy draw, do you think?
I don't know much about Basel. They were good in Champions League last season.
They're joint top in the Swiss league at the moment with a Pine Martin, I think.
And I think Spurs are best equipped of the three teams in the Europa League to win it.
But
not least because their manager has won the competition before.
Absolutely. Newcastle, the other side in there, they've got Benfica, who are top in Portugal right now. And of course, held Barcelona. They had a 0-0 at the Camp Nou, did they not?
Yeah, I think that'll be a really fun game to watch because Benfica are a no holds barred kind of team. They don't have much defensively about them because, if you recall, at the end of the summer transfer window, they lost Javi Garcia to Man City and they lost Axel Witsel to Zenit St. Petersburg. Mm. So ever since then, they've kind of had to attack and win by outscoring opponents rather than holding them. So it should be fun.
Ooh, interesting. Well, of course, the other draw in the Europa League quarterfinals, Barry, is Fenerbahce Lazio. Lazio surprised to find them here after they got past Stuttgart, despite not having Miroslav Klose in the team. Your thoughts, James?
Yeah, they've been doing the Serie A coefficient great things. I mean, that is a very, very tasty, fiery encounter between two clubs who have, very passionate fan bases. It's just a shame that I think, they've both got behind closed doors. Yeah. I think Lazio have certainly...
Fenerbahce are as well, are they?
Well, no, I think there was that great... I can't remember who they were playing, to be honest, in the last round, but Fenerbahce were locked out and their fans sent these parachuted flares into the ground.
Brilliant. They fired flares over the top of the stadium.
Yeah, which looked pretty cool. I'm sure it was fairly disruptive and we shouldn't condone that sort of thing, but it was...
Look cool, though.
Yeah.
All right. And Lazio have still got another game behind closed doors.
I think they've still got one more game behind closed doors, yeah.
After getting off probably quite lightly... for the attacks on Spurs fans earlier in the campaign.
It was for repeated offences,
right?
So there was that, and then there was also making fascist salutes when I think they were playing. Was it Gladbach?
All right. Quick mention for Francesco Totti, since we're on the subject of Roman football, and he is Roman football, and Roman football is him. And he, what was it, 2-0 against Parma, and he scored. We did two things, really. He scored goal number 226, which makes him now the second all-time highest scorer in Serie A history. Silvio Piola, of course, the leader, he's 48 goals ahead. And he also pulled off a quite remarkable running 360 backheel pass.
Yeah, which one of his teammates then made a pig's ear of the chance, which was a bit of a shame. But Paolo Bandini's Serie A column today is an homage to Francesco Totti, and that you can see that clip in there.
Yeah. Oh, magnificent.
Well, and somebody initially had a car crash. What's...
Yeah, Martin Caceres, the Juventus defender. He was, I think he was driving home from, after they'd got to the station, back to Turin after their win over Bologna. And he was involved in a collision with another car. He was taken to hospital. He had some head trauma, had to have 30 stitches, but apparently he's okay.
All right, then. So. Okay. A few more posts. Hey, here's Lex saying, you have to mention the St Mirren's Scottish League Cup win on the pod. You mentioned our semi-win. So there you go. Tick.
That was a good game.
Oh, was it, Barry?
Yeah. St Mirren won 3-2. Came from behind. I'm sure you know all this anyway, James.
Yeah, we were watching the Dundee Derby.
We watched the Ding Dong Dundee Derby.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Who won that?
No, 1-1 it was to... We're a bit sketchy on the Dundee will be happy
goal,
with that,
wasn't
there? Huh?
Was there a late goal? Was it an equaliser?
Oh, there was a late goal. I think it was a late equaliser. I'm pretty sure one of the teams might be in 10 men at this point. Scottish listeners will be delighted at it.
Yeah, well, none of them got at all upset that I pretended not to know where Annan was.
It was a very convincing imitation of a person who didn't know where Annan was.
Is that what you think?
Yeah. That was my. Somebody posting in saying, "Is there not somewhere a FitBar Weekly where they make under research comments about English football?" I'd like to think there is, actually.
Well, perhaps someone should start one up.
Perhaps.
Or you and Murray could. We see. We only tend to get you and Murray on the phone when something bad happens.
Well, yeah. So. No, we also did after Celtic beat Barcelona. We had him on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And
well, something bad had happened to Barcelona.
Well, that's true. I suppose arguably so. Hammer Raccoon, just to conclude our little sample of listeners' posts, Simon. Hammer Raccoon says, I thought I would draw attention to the battle to stay in the Football League. There are five teams at the bottom, all tied on 40 points, with York City only 1 point better off on 41. Those five teams include Edgar Davids Barnet and Financial Mismanagement's Plymouth Argyle. It's an extraordinary situation, isn't it?
It's an extraordinary situation. Accrington Stanley beat Barnet 3-2 on Saturday in the big bottom-of-the-table clash to pull level with all those other teams on 40 points. And it is a remarkable-looking league, there, just down at the bottom there, League 2, with, what, six clubs.
Mm. Well, York, and then a point behind them, Torquay, Plymouth, Barnet, Aldershot and Accrington.
Yeah, incredible scenes.
Incredible scenes. Meantime, in the Championship, Nottingham Forest, not so funny now, are you?
Yeah, and really an amazing story, given that it is, what, 5 or 6 weeks since they were being dismissed as a laughing stock after Alex McLeish left by mutual consent. Mm. They appointed Billy Davis, and in 8 games since, he lost his first, drew his second, and has won 6 on a spin now. Yeah, when he was appointed, they were kind of mid-table. They were exactly 10 points from third bottom and 10 points from fifth back then. And now they're fifth themselves. Leicester were second when Billy Davis took over. Now they're sixth.
Right. And you're Watford. They're 1 point off the... Is it one place off the playoff?
Yeah,
basically
there are significant issues with form among all those top six, except for Nottingham Forest.
Okay.
Cardiff have wobbled, but have the lead to cross the finish line first, you'd have thought.
7 points clear of Hull.
Of Hull. Hull lost on Saturday to Nottingham Forest at home. Watford lost, Crystal Palace lost, and Leicester lost at the weekend.
Mm.
So that's the rest of the top six. Leicester's form is abysmal, and it looks very much like they might either slip out of the top six or do away with their manager, or indeed both.
Right, cool. Who do you think is going to go up? And who would you like to go up, apart from Watford? You've been there.
You know, I think it's been I think that the Championship is the best division in English football. I think that the quality of play is generally pretty high. The level of competitiveness is excellent. You've seen this season, like Cardiff have been running away with it, but they lost at home to Peterborough, say. It is one of those divisions where anyone can beat anyone, as they say. I think Crystal Palace are playing really well, and they got their backsides handed to them at Brighton yesterday. But, Hull and Crystal Palace are looking excellent. Watford, when they are on form, are probably the best team in the division, but they are very far from form currently, I think.
Interesting.
Bolton were on a similar zooming run up the table under Doogie Freedman. He didn't get off to such a great start there, but I think they'd won 5 or 6 in the spin, but they got beaten away to Ipswich at the weekend.
Yeah, they're second in the old form table, mm-hmm. behind Nottingham Forest. Bolton are doing pretty well.
Mick McCarthy, though, in some trouble with sections of the home support.
Well, he was in trouble with his wife,
right?
For
Mrs. McCarthy,
celebrating Ipswich's goal by shouting "You fucking beauty" in thick Barnsley accent,
right?
And apparently, his granddaughter was present, and he shouldn't be talking in a potty mouth fashion.
She's only 7 weeks old, the granddaughter. I'm with you, Mrs. Mick. There's no room for that kind of thing.
7 weeks you can get away with swearing.
I don't think there's any.
I remember discussions in our house about, like,
were you 7 weeks old?
When we had our first child.
Oh, I see, right.
We continued swearing prolifically, as is our wont. But we're discussed from time to time. Is it time now to stop? Think a couple more weeks.
Really?
Yeah, time now to stop now. Mm. So we keep going for a while.
Take, I think, a 7 weeks view of that,
say what you like.
Really? And Mozart in the womb, none of that?
Very little of that, yeah.
Okay.
As a result of the lack of Mozart that inflicted on our daughter when she was in the womb, her favourite band is now Boney M. So,
Boney M?
Yeah.
Where did she get that from, Simon? I'm looking at the parents.
Yeah, I don't know who first played her Brown Girl in the Ring, but she came home from nursery one day fairly obsessed by that song, and it is now that and the version of Can Can by Bad Manners.
Right.
And Jessie J. Those are the big hits. So, right. Yeah, go with the Mozart.
Extraordinary thing about Brown Girl in the Ring was that it was I could be wrong about this, but it was like a record it was a record number one, wasn't it? But it was actually the B-side of Rivers of Babylon. Rivers of Babylon was number one for about 17 weeks. And then just when it went, some DJ flipped the disc. Ask your parents about what I'm referring to. and no, Ben, no. And they had Brown Girl in the Ring. Extraordinary that there were that many people out there who hadn't bought the original, who then wanted to buy the
thing. I can't talk about Boney. I'm still traumatised
from
the apartment we stayed in during Euro 2008 in Vienna.
Of course.
Which was owned by a keen amateur photographer
who
was obsessed with Boney M.
Had he not styled them on a tour or something like that?
Well, I think he just followed them around tour. Right. And he was like that obsessive Alan Partridge fan.
Right. I'm not sure that the Boney M that he followed around necessarily...
I think there was one remaining member. Truly, truly strange.
Right, great band, of course. Your favourite Boney M song? James, you don't know what we're talking about, do you?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But, yeah.
Right. Part two is at an end. Part three after this. Battle at the bottom, battle not to get into the Championship, and some mighty, mighty results here. Let's start off, Barry, with Southampton, who earned themselves a handy bit of breathing space with that terrific win at Liverpool. You were there.
I was there, and it was a very entertaining game. The entertainment started outside the stadium beforehand. I was sitting on a little wall outside having a cigarette, and Graeme Le Saux walked past.
Oh.
And... four Liverpool fans who were walking alongside shouted at him, Graham, how you? Sorry, that's a terrible accent. But anyway, so he turned to them, oh, how are you, lads? And by the time he turned, they'd all bent over and were pointing at their bottoms, Robbie Fowler style. And it was all highly amusing, if a little immature. But and
poor chap, really.
Yeah, well, he laughed. He was quite amused, and he was, I think, with his wife. So you know,
all right. Hey, have some of that.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it was quite amusing because the Scousers were incredibly pleased with themselves and their little jape.
Right, but they weren't laughing after the game, were they, Barry?
No, they weren't. Liverpool were absolutely terrible. It was an appalling performance. And Southampton were really, really good. Southampton should possibly have been 6 or 7 goals clear at half time, and that's not an exaggeration. They just created so many chances. And went in at the break, they were only 2-1 up, and their manager was furious at the sloppy goal they conceded on the stroke of half time. And it looked then like they might blow it, because Liverpool improved a bit in the second half. But Southampton remained pretty composed, considering their position, and scored a third. Jay Rodriguez sort of wrapped up the points. 10 minutes to go, he was excellent, man of the match, and the best performance out of many, many performances.
All right. A little bit of love for Morgan Schneiderlin as well, who I always feel should have the third after his name. Morgan Schneiderlin, the third. Apparently he's made the most tackles and the most interceptions of all players in the Premier League this season.
Right, I did not know
about
that.
Unsung heroes, Morgan Schneiderlin. Yeah.
He scored a good goal too. He scored the opener and was good. Got in front of Skrtel and had a good flick into the far corner. But I mean, Brendan Rodgers, you know, is that famous stunt with the 3 envelopes. I would suggest he's going to need 5 or 6 more envelopes because
trip to Ryman's beckons.
Brad Jones, Luis Suarez, and Lucas, who came on at half time for Joe Allen, were the only 3 players who didn't disgrace themselves.
Right. All right. In other news, Sunderland with a 1-1 draw against Norwich, 10-man Norwich after Mark Bunn was sent off. Here's a stat from Ian McIntosh: 7 wins in Martin O'Neill's first 10 games. In his next 44, only 9. And they're right in the midst of it now, are they not?
I think they're bottom of the form table of the last 6 games.
Mm.
They're 15th in the table, but they're well in it, and they've they're bottom of the form table, as James says, and they've got matches against Manchester United, Chelsea, Newcastle, and Everton coming up.
Mm.
I would expect them to get no points at all from those 4 games.
Wow!
So
it was an incredibly uninspiring match. I watched as much of it as my soul could bear.
Right,
and then fled in terror.
Right,
just a man up against Norwich at home. To fluff that, and not just fluff it. Norwich had a wonderful chance when Titus Bramble decided not to bother playing. Holt ran clean through, and but for an abysmal bit of control, would probably have won the game for Norwich. It was really dismal stuff, I thought.
Right, okay.
There was one stage in that game. Craig Gardner had the ball and was running forward, and he actually had to slow down almost to a standstill and point to his left to where he wanted a runner to be. And, you know, they're just so clueless and bereft of ideas and anything resembling inspiration that I think they deserve to go down. Their only hope at the moment is that there will be 3 teams who are even worse than they are. And there possibly will be, but It's unlikely. You know, it's hard to see Reading or QPR getting out of it, but all the rest, you know, from Wigan up, you've Villa, Southampton, West Ham, Newcastle, they're all better than Sunderland.
Hmm. All right, what about Wigan, eh? What about their win against Newcastle? What about the linesman?
Dirty, dirty Wigan's. I think the linesman, whereas Mark Halsey, the referee, was probably unsighted for Conor McManaman's horror challenge. There's no reason why the linesman...
Well, the linesman's looking directly at it in the replays. And also on the Wigan's winner late on, the handball, that's on the same assistant side, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, poor show.
Yeah, because I think Newcastle, to be fair, as you can imagine, after seeing, you know, one of your new hopefuls, you know, go off with a potentially, you know, career-threatening injury.
They're talking about knee ligaments?
Knee ligaments, and I think some bruising on the thigh and the shin, but obviously the knee ligaments are the bigger issue here. Mm. But they came out in the second half and and were really sort of fired up for it.
They were fairly fired up coming off the first half, as I recall.
Yeah, with assistant manager John Carver sent to the stands. I thought a brave man to get in the in between him and Wigan's coaching staff. But they came out and I thought they did well. And it was quite the injustice, really. But as Martinez was saying, they need luck, really, and they got it in both aspects yesterday.
Mm. Well, they're 3 points still off safety. And the team right above them, Aston Villa, in potentially the biggest game of the weekend, coming up with an absolutely massive win at home to QPR. Who's the star here? Brad Guzan? Who would be your...
Andreas Reimann seemed to play pretty well that game. A few good passes and a nicely taken goal.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed to have a good day. I still worry a little bit about Villa. I've not seen too many good performances from them this season, and looking around them, Wigan were not great yesterday, but they certainly have potential, as they showed against Everton a week ago. Southampton, they were brilliant on Saturday. Villa may have won that match, but I think that they may vie with Sunderland for that third worst spot.
Right, a terrific match it was. QPR have earned plenty of criticism this year, but you'd be very happy for both teams if they're going to make performances like that to stick around in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, Redknapp at the end was saying that they should have been out of sight by half time. Mm. So many chances did they have? And also, Loic Remy had quite an unchallenged header, which he put wide of the post, which could have been an equalising goal. And you think that's the kind of game, the momentum-changing game.
Right. Which, that moment could end up being the turning point of their season.
Yeah.
Wow. Because they're 7 points off safety now, Barry.
Well, I've thought for ages that they would be relegated.
So did I. And then last week I thought for ages that they were going to stay up.
But it was starting to cross my mind. I see Tony Fernandez on Twitter was, he's sort of like that famous comic Al Ali, the PR man for Saddam Hussein, who used to, go on TV and say, everything's fine, we haven't been, Baghdad hasn't been invaded, and you could see the tanks rolling in over his shoulder. And Tony Fernandez does seem to have that air about him now of, telling QPR fans that there's still time. And there is time. It's mathematically, until they're mathematically down, of course, you can hope. But I think that result was just massive, and that was a game they really needed to win.
Right. All right. One other thing, actually, Simon, your namesake, Simon Brodkin, who ran on to join in the Man City warm-up.
Mm.
Why was he doing it? He's a comedian, is that right?
Yeah, he's a comedian, and he's most well known for his alter ego Lee Nelson. Who has his own show on BBC Three.
Is that quality Lee Nelson?
Yeah.
I've never seen him, but I've seen the posters.
The very same.
Oh right.
But he's basically a character comedian, and he has another character called Jason Bent.
Oh okay.
And so he was basically dressed up as Jason Bent.
Oh, right.
His shirt had Bent and 9 on the back.
Right.
And it was a publicity stunt.
Right.
I thought originally that it must have been something to do with this BBC Three show, and it was all a fix. But it does appear that it was nothing to do with the BBC Three show, and it was just a publicity stunt for
something.
Him.
Right. Mm. Cool. All right, nice one.
He's actually very funny.
He is?
Yeah. He's a very funny guy.
In person?
In person.
Right.
He improvises brilliantly, I think. So go and see him when he gets out of prison.
Right. It's become a plot. And how about this? How about this? You know who he went to school with?
Go on.
Producer Ben.
Well.
And he went to Jewish Youth Club with you?
Yes, he did, yeah. And
he was, you didn't mention that.
A good friend of my wife.
So was he funny at school, Producer Ben? No, apparently he wasn't funny at school. Was he funny at Jewish Youth Club?
He's for as long as I've known him, which is quite a long time, he's been a funny guy.
Right.
Yeah. And now he gets paid for it.
Super. Well, that brings to an end this edition of Football Weekly. Another one awaits on Thursday, in which we're going to be talking about England San Marino, Barry. So, yeah. All right. Have a super week in the meantime, everybody. Many thanks to producer Ben, to Barry, Simon and James. And we'll speak to you soon.